Welcome to PR360, where every week the brightest minds in public relations, communications, and media discuss the topics and trends you need to know about. PR360 was produced in partnership with Global Results Communications. Now here's your host, Todd Perry.
Welcome back to PR360. Our guest today is Jeannie Dietrich, the founder, CEO, and author of Spin Sucks, host of the Spin Sucks podcast, and author of Spin Sucks, the book. She is the creator of the Peso model and has crafted a certification for it in partnership with Syracuse University. For the past 18 years, she has run and grown the Arment Dietrich Agency and is the co-author of Marketing in the Round, co-host of Inside PR, and the co-host of the Agency Leadership Podcast. So, Jeannie, is there anything I missed?
No, I love to hear Spin Sucks over and over and over again. Branding. Yep. It's funny. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with repetition, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always fun when I'm coming to do the show with people who do other podcasts. Real quickly, so it's the Agency Leadership, Inside PR, and Spin Sucks podcast. So how many episodes of just pure pod are you putting out a week?
Oh, gosh. Of just pure pod for week three, and then one video. So I guess if you added that, four. Yeah.
Okay. How do you keep the creative juices going to have, you know, three different shows and managing ideas and keeping it interesting? And obviously, you know, you don't want to put out content for content's sake. You want to have something ready and something to say. So how do you make all that work?
There are a couple of ways. So my Agency Leadership Podcast co-host Chip Griffin and I keep a document just of running ideas. So if one of us sees something that somebody has asked online about growing your agency or leading your agency or agency troubles, then we just jot that in there. And then in preparation 5 minutes before, we go through the list and go, what sounds good to you? Mm-hmm. So that one. Inside PR, kind of Martin, Joe, and I share links via email quite a bit. So just to help the creative juices going. And for the Spin Sucks one, it's really just what's top of mind for me in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, there are lots of things happening in the world. Right after I saw the new Taylor Swift movie, The Eras, of her concert, I was like, this woman is a brilliant marketer. Yeah. So, you know, I did an episode on that. So it's just kind of what's happening in the world at the time for me.
Cool. I think one of the great things is when being open to having things to talk about and things that inspire you and things that you think will make a great topic is the key. It's kind of like running around with your radar up. Real quick, why do you think, obviously Taylor Swift is a great marketer, but why do you think she is?
Oh my gosh. Well, a few things. First of all, she's incredibly approachable. And she's all about the fans, right? She's all about her community. And it's, what can I do to encourage my fans? And what can I do to make them feel like they're part of this journey? And she does it in such a way that's really authentic. Mm-hmm. And I think brands try to copy that, but because they're not authentic, they don't truly care. And I think she truly cares, or at least she comes across it like she does. You know, one of the things that I thought when I was watching that, I wish we've seen her in concert, but we haven't yet. But when I was watching the movie, a couple of things really struck me. One is that she walked out onto the stage and she just looked around and she was like, wow, I mean, this is incredible. So she takes time to smell the roses, for lack of a better term, right? And the other thing is she was so real. I mean, she's performing and she's sweaty and her bangs are stuck to her head and she's just having a good time. Mm-hmm. There's the story of, I can't remember which concert it was, that she was in the rain and she just performed in the rain. Yeah. And she was soaking wet and she didn't care what she looked like because she was having such a good time and her audience was having such a good time. So it's those kinds of things that I think it's really hard to replicate that as a brand if it's not something you truly care about.
Yeah, it's the power of authenticity and that certain it and that certain charisma and dedication and love to the craft that, as they say, you can't fake the funk, you know?
You cannot. Exactly.
So, Jeannie, talking about other brilliant marketers, I've got one in front of me right now. And so Spin Suck started as a blog and then blossomed into a movement. How did you get from A to where you are now?
I wish I could say it was some like strategic, we sat down and we said, okay, we're going to start blogging and then suddenly it's going to become this thing. And that's not the case at all. We actually started the blog in 2006 and it limped along really poorly for 3 years. It was really bad. And as I look back on those 3 years, first of all, I can't believe we kept doing it. It was that bad.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did, but from a business perspective, I don't know what I was thinking. But we didn't have an editorial calendar. We didn't have a consistent voice. There were no content rules that we were living by. Anybody could blog about whatever was top of mind. So we thought there were blog posts from the Cubs playing poorly and quote unquote marketing lessons you could get from that to like why speakers shouldn't wear jeans on stage. It was really bad. And then the Great Recession hit and I had some extra time to really focus on it. And so that's when we started to put those things into play. It's like, should we have an editorial calendar and should we have a voice and what should the content be about? And it became a little more sophisticated and professional. It's still at that point by no stretch of the imagination was great, but at least we had those things in play, the kinds of things we would do for clients that we had not done for ourselves yet. That sort of helped get it up into other areas. It started to show up in search and things like that.
Were there any particular articles that really leapt out and went viral that were a great benefit to people looking for information on a topic that took the blog to the next level?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. One is we've always stood for what we believe in. And part of that is Spin Sucks, right? I mean, when we were thinking about what to name the blog, it was very much, I remember an intern saying, well, you hate it when people say that we spin for a living, you know, because when you tell people you're in PR, they're like, oh, you're one of those liars, or, oh, you spin the truth. And you're like, no, I'm actually not. That's not what I do. Yes, there are pieces of the industry that do that, maybe in Hollywood and Washington, D.C., but for the most, like most of us abide by a code of ethics.
Yeah.
And so just from the idea of the name, Spin Sucks, and then we've always stood a ground. Like we've always stood for what we believe in. We have values that we believe in and we've always stood up for them, whether or not it's popular. So we don't sort of sit on the fence of values. We always say like, this is what we believe and this is why we think you should do the same. And it's taking that stand, I think, that has helped it sort of grow into what it has today.
And what are those specific values?
We believe in ethics. We don't lie, which is really the genesis of it. But we also believe that, you know, there's such a bad connotation among executives about what we do. And it's for many reasons. One is because we can't measure our work to sales. Another reason is because they believe that it's sort of this magic behind the scenes that happens and they don't know. They know if they have good PR and they know if they have bad PR, but they don't know where those two intersect. So all of the stuff that we do is around educating both executives and the industry on this is what PR is. This is what you can expect. This is how you measure it to something that matters instead of, you know, just media impressions and advertising equivalencies. And this is, you know, sort of the process. You can't just expect that you're going to hire a communicator and tomorrow you're going to be in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. So it's all about educating both sides of the coin, so to speak.
One of the biggest lessons I've taken from doing this show and speaking to people in the industry is that PR is a 24/7 business. And one of the big challenges, client comes to you, they want it now, when they haven't been doing their groundwork and they left a fiery mess for you to come into and then expect just wham, bam, the magic to happen overnight.
Uh-huh. Yes. It happens all the time. And one of the things I hear constantly is, well, we had a PR firm or we've had several PR firms and we paid them a bunch of money and we didn't get any results. Mm. And as you dig into that, I always use that as an opportunity to understand what they think results are. And when you dig into it and you find actually they did get results, there were lots of stories, there was lots of coverage, but what an executive is saying is, sure, there was all this activity, but it didn't result in something that matters to my organization.
Right. So could you please explain the PESO model? It's a certification done in partnership with Syracuse University. Break it down for me.
Sure. So the PESO model is paid media, earned media, shared media, and owned media. So PESO. And what we really, the reason this came to be is that probably about 12 or 13 years ago, we were very much a crisis reputation and media relations firm, mm-hmm. which was great. We did really good work. We enjoyed the work that we were doing. We had really good clients, but we had peaks and valleys. So when something was happening, you had a crisis to fix, a reputation to work on, a new product launch, you know, you had stories, you had coverage, but then there were valleys when nothing was happening. And what I discovered as an agency owner is that clients don't like to pay when they feel like there's nothing happening, even right. though you're doing work behind the scenes, preparing for the next, mm-hmm. right? They don't see that correlation. So we were trying to figure out how to sort of keep things consistent so that when there weren't stories running, for whatever reason, you had other things happening. And so we had been blogging for ourselves for a few years, so we understood how that worked. We understood how content marketing worked. So we started to add that in mm-hmm. and how owned media and earned media worked together. And then, of course, we added in social media to, you know, for distribution and promotion. And then one of the last things we added was paid media, just from the perspective of not necessarily Google ads and social media ads, but boosting content and native advertising of old, you know, paying for editorial, those kinds of things. So we brought all of those in together. And once we did that, we had consistency and clients were really happy with the idea that there was all of this activity, but we were also able to demonstrate it to results.
Right.
And results could be, you know, stock price increases. It could be demos. It could be trials. It could be donations, it could be volunteers, whatever it is that the organization cares about, we could correlate that work to something. And doing it with that integrated model helped us do that.
Wow, it seems like a kind of a positive cycle for both, you know, client and the agency. And it also, I think it's pretty brilliant because it shows the client, here's exactly what we're doing. Here's what we're working towards. There's a baseline of activity going on besides the peaks and valleys. And it's something that you stand up for and they can come back to you and you can show them results. And so, and then also maybe, well, the funny thing is through doing this work, you might be inoculating them against the next crisis, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's like, how are we doing this to ensure that you're building trust and authority? Because one of the biggest challenges in a crisis is the organization doesn't have trust or authority with their community, with their customers, you know, the community around them. And so having to create that while you're managing a crisis is almost impossible. So it's how do we create those things so that when there is a crisis, not if, but when, can you manage it because people believe you?
Right, right. You've got a bedrock of support and proof and credibility that to stand on, you know?
That's right.
So you have some strong ideas on thought leadership, and that seems to be, I guess, the buzzword these days, but some people are doing it right, and some people are still working towards getting it right. what are your thoughts on thought leadership?
You know, first of all, I actually have a friend, Frank Strong, who said this that made me laugh out loud. He was like, if you're going to be a thought leader, you have to have a thought. And I think that it's, I laughed because it's like what we see is that executives say, I want to be a thought leader. Mm-hmm. But they don't want to put in the work to actually do that. And, you know, I talked about earlier how one of the reasons SpinSucks has become such a big brand is because we stand for something. Either you hate us or you love us.
Right.
There's no in between, right? And either you agree with us or you don't, which is fine. It's taken me a long time to be able to say that, but it is fine now. To be a thought leader, you have to take a stand. And I think so many executives, because most today are still baby boomers, they've been told their entire careers, don't talk about your values. Don't talk about your ethics. Don't talk about what you stand for, because if you do, you're going to alienate half of your customers.
Right.
So their entire careers, they've been told this. And now they're being told in the last, you know, since the pandemic, they're being told, actually, you do need to stand up for what you believe in, and you do need to communicate your values. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what to do. So when they say, we want to be a thought leader, and you say to them, what do you stand for and what are your values? They go, whoa. So they don't want to do the hard work, or it's uncomfortable to do the hard work to become a true thought leader.
Right. And then, so, you know, you go to put out your statement and it means absolutely nothing, you know?
Correct. Yeah. Or you sound like everybody else.
Right. Or, you know, the worst thing is it's a statementless statement, and then people don't like you at all, right? They like you less.
Yes.
sorry, I was trying to think about where I was going with this. But, you know, it's like, if you're going to be a thought leader, have a thought. If you're going to have a podcast, have an opinion, have something to say, have a topic. You know, so much of it is, oh, you know, how are you doing? You know, what'd you have for lunch yesterday?
Right,
there's no topic.
Right.
It's just people like inherently think that just two random people talking is interesting, which it is definitely not. unless there's some kind of benefit to it. Again, you're explaining to me some stuff about PR I had no idea about, and giving something to our audience. And the same thing should be taken for thought leadership. If you put out a three paragraph screed on LinkedIn, may the screed have some juice in it, some nails, some vinegar,
yes,
right?
Yes. Some vinegar. I like that. I'm stealing that. That's good.
So there are a lot of features on AI and marketing on the Spin Sucks blog. What are your overall thoughts about AI?
I freaking love it. I love it. And one of the things I talk about, because PR people tend to say, well, oh my gosh, it's going to take my job. And it's not going to take your job. It's going to make you more efficient, and you're going to evolve your job for sure, mm-hmm. but it's not going to replace you. And so you have to think about, how can I use AI to make me more efficient? Just like you use the internet to make you more efficient. You know, you no longer have to get, I don't even know if the Yellow Pages still exist, yeah. but you don't have to get your Yellow Pages, your phone book out and look phone numbers up, right? You could just go to the internet and do that. So what AI is doing is making you significantly more efficient, and it's helping you with everything. My husband was telling me the other night that he was trying to figure out, he had a conundrum in one of his spreadsheets, and the pivot table wasn't working the way he wanted it to. So he asked ChatGPT how to do it. Mm. And it was like, do this, this, and this. And he's like, and it worked.
Yeah.
And he's like, I Googled it to death and I couldn't find the answer, but ChatGPT gave it to me in about 2 seconds.
Right.
So think about how it's going to make you more efficient so that you can spend time on other things. I just saw a report that said that people who are using generative AI are saving like 14 hours a week.
Wow.
On tasks. So if you can save 14 hours a week by using AI,
what other things can you do? But then my fear, now I'm all about AI, people, let's do it, you know, let's run right into the future. I'm fine with that. I'm afraid of the shakeups as somebody that my whole life has worked as a writer. And now
sure.
I'm looking in the CMS where I upload stories that I do for Upworthy, and I have my headline, and now I hit a button and there's seven other AI options. And I feel a lot like if you're the guy at McDonald's, and right next to you is the touchpad where people can order their food. Mm-hmm. And you're the guy who's getting paid mm-hmm. to take the order. And mm-hmm. I cannot mm-hmm. separate that from everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be greater and better. I think some of my clients are going to stop calling me soon is what I think. That's my genuine scary feeling about this. So I don't know. I
think that's fair. But also, just like with thought leadership, when they stop calling you because they think they can use AI to replace you, they're not going to have content that's interesting or different or says anything or has a soul,
yeah.
right? I mean, human beings add the soul to it. So, yeah, you can use generative AI to write a draft of an article. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Is it good? No. Does it sound like an eighth grader wrote it? Yes.
Yeah.
But And there will be companies that do that for sure. But you as a writer are adding the soul, you're adding the story, you're adding the characterization, right, to it. So and AI yet not yet can do that.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a good point you've made, Jeannie, that the AI, because the AI exists, it's also a call for me to get better at what I do, right? You know, you've got some competition. There's nothing wrong with that. That's, you know, that makes us all a bit stronger. And then B, to find a soul so that I have something to contribute. Yep. So I've got to get my soul going and maybe be more of a thought leader and take some real stands on things and make my brand stronger as a writer so that some, you know, little computer can't chase up and take my lunch away.
And it won't. I promise you it won't.
Okay. Well, thank you. I've really appreciated speaking with you this morning, Jeannie. What's the call to action? How do people follow you? Where do they go? How do they learn more about Spin Sucks?
The best place is spinsucks.com. Everything's there.
I love it. All in one package. And you know what? Here's the thing. I think for the next... What we should have done, actually, at the beginning of this show was, we should have said, take a shot every time you hear Spin Sucks on this episode.
And everybody be drunk.
That's right. That's right. But they would know so much more about PR, which would be fine. That's the takeaway. Drunk and educated. All right. Well, thank you.
Drunk and educated. I love it.
Thank you, Jeannie. I hope to have you on the show sometime in the future. And until then, best wishes.
Thanks for having me.
PR360 was produced by Todd Perry in partnership with Global Results Communications. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave a review wherever you get podcasts. Follow GRC on all socials at Global Results. Follow Todd on Twitter at Todd A. Perry. That's Todd with one D. Talk to you next week.